Next case this morning is Dunnigan versus Newhouse.
Morning, Your Honors.
Morning.
Chris Adorosky on behalf of the appellants, along with co-counsel from my office, David Reeve. This is a malpractice case. It's a malpractice case that went to a jury verdict. The main issue on appeal here is an inconsistency in the verdict. The jury found that there was a failure to obtain informed consent, and this is on the jury verdict form. The following interrogatory asked whether or not there was proximate cause. The jury answered no to that.
Verdict form directed the jury, if you answer yes to one, you have to answer two.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Isn't that the nub of the problem?
No. On further research, it appears that there's actually two inconsistencies in the jury instruction, because Washington observes an objective standard on informed consent. And element number three of the RCW 770050 is the reasonably prudent patient standard. And it's the Backlund case that establishes that, and that is really the rule that's followed in the majority of jurisdictions. And that was discussed in great detail in the Canterbury 1972 decision.
I'm not tracking, because if the jury's been instructed you have to answer two, are you saying they never should have been directed to answer two?
That's correct, Your Honor. And it's my mistake in the sense that I agreed to that verdict form. And then I was not present when the jury was polled. My partner over in Bainbridge was present by telephone. So there was no objection made at that time.
Were you present when the jury inquiry came out that said, in regards to instruction number 10, the elements instruction, for informed consent, if one of the four propositions is found as cannot be proved, does that require or dictate an answer of no for question one?
Your Honor, to be honest with you, I can't really remember. If I was present, it was by telephone. So I believe that the court probably called and said, this is the question for the jury, and here's how I'm going to answer it. Do you have any problem with that? Pretty sure that's what happened.
But doesn't that suggest the jury was right on top of this exact conundrum of, we say, yes, it's informed consent, and you've told us in 10, informed consent includes proximate cause, then are you telling us which way do we answer number one?
It's because it's an inconsistent verdict, because the jury, in finding and in answering that first interrogatory in the affirmative, has found all four elements as set forth in jury instruction number 10. We don't know that, Your Honor. We don't know that that's what...
Is that something we need to know, to have an inconsistent verdict?
No, because...
Part of the elements of this case include that, had she been properly informed, she wouldn't have proceeded, because if she'd have gone ahead anyway, if she'd been told everything she was supposed to have been told, and she still would have proceeded with surgery, you haven't established proximate cause.
Well, actually, she did testify that she'd been told.
She did testify to that, but do we know whether the jury believed her?
We don't know. We'll never know, Your Honor.
And don't we need to know that to accept
no.
her position?
No, because the finding in their answer to that first interrogatory is a yes, presupposes that they have found proximate cause, because that's exactly what the jury instruction says.
When we look at the cases that deal with this very similar problem in terms of negligence, do you find negligence, which has been defined to include proximate cause? If yes, then answer the next question, which is it the proximate cause of injury? In Brashears, Stalkup, and Mears, it seems like those cases all hold. The test is, the way we resolve if there's true inconsistency, is we look at the evidence in the record, and if the evidence could split, if it's not, if you find negligence, you inherently must have found proximate cause, like you've amputated the wrong leg or something like that. But if you've got evidence that would allow the jury to go that on that split, then that's not truly inconsistent.
Actually, I think it's completely inconsistent. It's not consistent with informed consent, because informed consent relies on the reasonable prudent patient standard, which is the objective test, and that is causation as per the Backlund case. Right. I find it interesting that the defense didn't cite or even discuss that, and that's because that's really the Achilles heel of their defense in this case. The fact is that if the jury accepts the jury instruction number 10, it has found proximate cause by finding that a reasonably prudent patient would not have consented.
So we don't apply the test that they used in Brashears and Stalkup and Mears?
No. I mean, it's an objective test, the reasonably prudent patient standard, and that is the law in the state. And on the fourth element, it includes specifically the words proximate cause.
The element of negligence is proximate cause.
No. I mean, negligence and failure to provide reasonably prudent care is a totally different issue.
I think you're confusing. Judge Verones asked about the ordinary negligence case, because the cases that are relied upon aren't professional negligence cases. They are ordinary negligence cases, and there's an allegation that there's an inconsistent verdict. And because there's a set of facts where you could find the defendant negligent, but that wasn't the proximate cause of the plaintiff's injuries, there isn't an inconsistent verdict.
But that's a fact-based analysis, and thank you for clarifying that. That's a fact-based analysis, and an objective-based analysis, which is the Backlund case on element number 3, is the reasonably prudent patient standard. It is not fact-specific. The jury has been charged with that instruction to determine four elements, and it says at the conclusion of that instruction, if you find from your consideration of all of the evidence that each of these propositions has been proved, your verdict should be for the plaintiff. That is why the verdict form in terms of the jury's response and the instruction, that's an inconsistent verdict.
Before you sit down, I want to make sure you have time to address waiver. Why isn't it waiver when the verdict comes in for you not to jump up, and I realize you weren't there, but from someone on your behalf to jump up and say, wait a minute, that's inconsistent. We've got to fix this while we still have the jury here.
Absolutely correct, Your Honor. That would have been the time to do it. I wasn't there. I was the trial counsel. However, this court retains jurisdiction. The Division I, the Malarkey case, there's a whole series, the Malarkey, McCray, Mears case. All of those allow that this court retains jurisdiction to correct that even under 49B, even if there was a failure to object at the time. And the case that the defense relies on is the Geardy case. And that's a situation where the lawyer was actually there when the jury was being polled. And he was basically laying in the weeds. He knew exactly that there was a problem, raised no objection at the time, and then later on raised the objection. And the court found there that because there was essentially he was aware of the problem and didn't speak. And this court in the Malarkey decision quoted that and essentially distinguished it and said, yes, we, the Court of Appeals, retain jurisdiction to decide this, even though you could argue that there was a waiver. The waiver argument is not an absolute in this case. And I would specifically direct the court. Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Amber Pierce on behalf of respondent Dr. Anu. Your Honor, this was a fair trial with straightforward pattern instructions and a model special jury verdict form. It appears.
I think this is a model form. I mean, it's a pattern form, but it seems like it's got an inherent problem in it. And it would be better to have questions that asked about each of the four elements in instruction 10 rather than only two questions. Wouldn't be here if the instruction had done that.
But typically, the negligent medical malpractice negligent claims break it into two elements: duty breach and then proximate cause. And
well,
the Washington
press. That doesn't make it a good idea. In this case, illustrates why it's probably a bad idea.
I agree, and there are different options with respect to whether or not the parties go to a general verdict or a special verdict.
Well, on the special verdict, if you'd stuck to your guns, in the proposal you made, that asks it the proper way. Did defendant, Dr. Anu, fail to inform the plaintiff material facts? If yes, proximate cause. It doesn't have the conundrum we have here.
Well, the conundrum that is purportedly being played out is actually logically inconsistent, because when you look at a medical malpractice instruction form, which is at CP 397, that too lays out the elements of duty, breach, and proximate cause. And so in the same way that, and so you can find that a doctor was negligent, but the negligence did not proximately cause the injuries.
Well, maybe that's inconsistent also.
I think Mears and Stockup say otherwise. I think Mears and the Stockup cases are spot on, that you and the court lays it out, and Mears was decided in August of 2014, that you can, in fact, have negligence and not have proximate cause. And the question is there substantial evidence for a jury to find that there was negligence and not proximate cause? And that is the case that we laid out in our brief, that, in fact, there were facts that came in of a lot of occurrences that happened that did not proximately cause Ms. Duncan's injuries with respect to informed consent.
We don't actually have the full record, do we?
Your Honor, we actually added the, it is at CP 31 and the verbatim report of proceedings at page 18 and 19, where we did lay out undisputed examples where Ms. Duncan claimed that we did not disclose that his office, that Dr. Anu's office had a handling fee for surgery tissue that was submitted to a foundation. Dr. Anu failed to disclose enough information about how smoking impacted healing from surgery, or that Dr. Anu failed to disclose an error on his website that he was in fact not board certified because, or double board certified because one of the certifications had lapsed. These were all problems that the plaintiff raised at trial, saying that she would not have consented based on this information. However, when you look at this information, none of this proximately caused her injuries or caused.
The counsel has said that the third element instruction 10, the reasonably treated patient under similar circumstances would not have consented to the treatment if informed of such material fact or facts, is found by the jury when it answers question number one in the special verdict form, yes. Why is he wrong?
I'm sorry, wrong with this respect to element three?
Yeah, you're telling us they're not inconsistent, I assume, because she would have gone ahead with the surgery even if she'd had the correct information about these things, because they're just minor things that really had nothing to do with her decision. That's what it sounds like you're saying.
Right.
And so counsel is telling us that when the question in special verdict form, question one was answered yes, that means the jury affirmatively found that the reasonably prudent patient wouldn't have consented had these matters been disclosed.
Well, I just...
You must disagree with
that. I do disagree with that,
so
Your Honor. Jurors are the sole judge of what a reasonably prudent person would do in this case. And they heard Ms. Dunnigan's testimony and determined that she would have gone ahead with this surgery anyway.
Okay, but how do we know that?
At this point, you can only look at the we know it based on the question that the jurors asked. And
all we know is that they're concerned that there are four different elements and there aren't four questions.
But if we go with the way your plaintiff wants us to go, then we are essentially eviscerating proximate cause as an element at all. And the Backlund case and Prosser on torts is very clear that proximate cause is a limitation.
Why are we eviscerating? And if we simply say the instructions have to make clear, the verdict form has to make clear what the jury's answer was to each of the four elements, rather than asking them one question that may or may not reflect their finding on two elements that seem to be compressed into one question.
It is, in the same way that the negligence, medical malpractice negligence instruction is compressed into three elements for one question, and the court and the jury can still find that there is duty breach and proximate cause based on.
So if we're not careful somewhere else to make sure we know what the jury's telling us, we don't need to hear either.
Your Honor, the statute's been around since 1976. And
it's not the statute that's the problem. It's not the elements of proof that are the problem. The problem is, do we know what the jury decided here? And if we know what they decided, are their answers consistent? The plaintiff tells us we know what their answer is to the third element, and that makes this an inconsistent verdict. I had anticipated that you would answer my question. We know what their answer to the third question is. They said, no, the reasonably prudent patient wouldn't or would have gone ahead with this. And that's why we answered yes after we got the answer to the question we asked from the judge. But that's not what you're telling me. And that makes me wonder whether my thinking about this is wrong.
Can I ask you a very different but practical question?
Certainly, Your Honor.
Normally, there's a call over the jury instructions. And when the defense submits an entirely different set of instructions that breaks, in this case, that breaks out the element, and the other side submits yet a different one that collapses them, was there any recorded colloquy of how the court resolved the differences in the two sets that he or she was, in this case, was presented to the judge?
That's a great question. And there was no recording of any sort of colloquy.
Do you know what happened? How did the judge pick this set?
I'm sorry, this is an agreed set. The plaintiffs proposed the jury instructions, defendants and plaintiffs both proposed the identical instructions with respect to number 9 and 10 on informed consent and negligence.
But different.
Still, the trial judge instructs the jury on that, the law. Did the trial judge inquire about the differences between the two sets? I know ultimately they agreed on it, but I'm curious because they're so different.
Well, the main thing is that both parties agreed on the special verdict form, which is really the issue here. Plaintiff proposed it. It was given. The jury answered it. The past president of the Washington State Bar Association last month proposed an identical verdict form, which again is based on Washington practice, and the jury had no problem reaching the same that yes, informed consent was not given, but that didn't proximately cause the injury.
Well, typically the special verdict form is fashioned in such a way that it tracks the jury instructions, right?
Yes, and it did here as well.
Well, did it? Why aren't there four questions? Why are there only two? Why doesn't it track instruction 10?
It could have attracted, tracked I mean, that would, instruction number 10.
I'm back to what I said at the beginning. That would eliminate any of the confusion that's alleged to have occurred here.
I think the jury, you're right, we don't know what the jury decided. But we do know that in answering the special verdict form, the jury did decide that a reasonably prudent person under the similar circumstances would have consented to this treatment.
Okay, and we know that because they answered question one yes?
Correct.
Do we apply the...
Otherwise they couldn't have answered it yes.
Precisely.
Do we apply the same test as in Brashear, Stalkup, and Mears?
Precisely the same test. This is by analogy the identical test, Your
and
Honor.
Counsel seems to be arguing on the other side. No, there's a difference. Negligence is another general term. Informed consent is a precise, specific term that triggers a different analysis.
I completely disagree. They're different independent causes of action, but they apply by analogy the same rules, same tests.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Very briefly, Your Honor, and it wasn't really argued, but just as by way of additional background in terms of what was the key thing that was presented at trial that that in terms of informed consent, the fact is that this Dr. Anu performs a procedure, a methodology of his abdominoplasty, which is not done by any other physician in this country. He basically draws lines on the patient's body, cuts out the tissue, and then flexes the patient and hopes he measured exactly right. Every other surgeon that does this procedure makes an incision, undermines the skin, flexes the patient, figures out where the skin needs to be cut off, cuts it off, and stitches it up. That's in simplistic terms. So that really is the main essence of informed consent in this case, which they didn't really discuss. And that is that if Dr. Anu had specifically said, hey, I've got a unique procedure, this is how I do it, no other doctor does this, but I think mine's better, she would not have gone ahead with the surgery. And that's really kind of the key point in terms of the main informed consent issue. A couple quick things in the closing seconds here. We found two New York cases, as the court is aware, which are directly on point. Exactly the same situation where the jury answered the first question, yes, there was a failure to obtain informed consent, no causation. In both cases, the judge reversed and remanded the cases for a new trial. The Mears case and Stockup, those are negligence cases. They're not informed consent. It's totally different. Counsel is not being square with the court on that. Two completely different concepts. And it's fact-based versus objective test. That is the reasonably prudent patient standard, which is the Backlund case. They never addressed that in their briefing. And I think that's probably all I've got to say, Your Honors. Thank you very much.